Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and a very warm welcome to you from the Barangaroo Studios here. This is The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Tuesday, the 4th of January. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great to have you along for the ride. Let's introduce our expert panel. Joining us, Carl Kapalinga from Think Markets and Mark Morland from Team Invest. Gentlemen, terrific to have you along for the first show of the year. And Carl, now's your chance to make the big prediction, of course, of where this year is going to go. In fact, I was just looking at the Fin Review this morning. They're quoting the January barometer. That's essentially suggesting that if the first month of the year is positive, then that's a good sign for the rest of the year. How are you seeing it?
Yeah, good afternoon, Andrew. Good afternoon, Mark. Look, I'm seeing it as I saw it at the close of 2021. You know, conditions are conducive to higher stock prices. Yet again, I'm not sure if we'll see the heady gains that we've seen over the last couple of years, but I still think it's going to be onwards and upwards. Certainly, there's nothing in the trends on the charts to suggest otherwise. As for whether, you know, January sort of tells the story for the rest of the year, I'm not so sure. January tends to be a fairly strong month seasonally anyway, and you know, I'm not sure it has much predictive ability there, but you know, Santa Claus is probably come and still here, and I think we'll see you know, a stronger market through Jan-Feb, and then, you know, the inevitable seasonal weakness from there, but overall I think we'll do well this year.
Yeah, okay. Mark, what are your thoughts then? And do you believe in the January barometer?
No, I don't. I mean, right. It's what the market likes is a recent, they like using recent information and extrapolating it. So, of course, if January is good, that means the rest of the year is going to be good. Yeah, that's the way it works. If December had been down really badly at the end, which it wasn't, then they would have been predicting doom and gloom in January. But our view is, or say, when I say our view, it's not really a Team Invest view because we're 580 individuals. But my view is that it's onward and upwards this year. I think the market will continue to do well. I think earnings are looking good without something to prick the bubble or spoil the game. I mean, if something really big happens, like China attacks Taiwan or something, then it's all bets are off. But assuming there's nothing extraneous that comes in and spoils the party, I'm expecting 2022 to be a very good year.
Okay, that sounds positive on both fronts. All right, let's get straight into it with our stock of the day, and it's all about coal. Who would have thought it that we're beginning the new year with a very old play? Let's take a look at Whitehaven Coal. In fact, its shares currently up by around 7% in this morning's trade. And it's tracking essentially the price of coal. Now, this is after Indonesia banned exports on concerns it couldn't meet its own power demands. So what are our experts feeling about Whitehaven and the outlook, I guess, more generally for coal? Mark?
I can't speak authoritatively about Whitehaven because I haven't actually looked at it for quite a few years, but I can say that my view on coal is very positive, even though, forgetting the ESG type movement and the demonising of coal, the reality is there's been far fewer new mines being brought on around the world, so there's a big squeeze. And I think I was reading the other day that Germany last year it burnt more coal than they ever have in their history, you know, all in the name of climate change, supporting their goals on zero emissions, because they closed down nuclear power plants, which is beyond my understanding. And I was talking to an exec at Glencore, who I think they're right up there as one of the largest coal miners in the world, and they are minting money. They said the coal is their biggest earner at the moment, and they are very, very bullish about the future. So even though it may be politically incorrect in a lot of quarters, I think coal's A, not going away anytime soon. And because of the fact that it's been very difficult to bring on any new suppliers, countries like Australia who have high grade coal generally are in a very good position. So I'm quite positive about it. Going back to Whitehaven, I can't forecast what their earnings are going to be because they dropped into a loss last year. And I don't know enough detail on what's going on within the company to be able to have an opinion on it. But I'll say I'm very bullish on coal.
Yep. Okay. Carl, of course, coal, pretty much a dirty word, particularly if you're an ESG investor. So what are your thoughts specifically on Whitehaven?
Yeah, look, I mean, the whole world is down on coal, isn't it? And it's very trendy to be down on coal. But, you know, I echo Mark's sentiments there. And whilst, you know, longer term, yeah, there probably isn't a great place for coal in our energy future. In the short to medium term, it's going to still be a crucial role in that transition. And Whitehaven, you know, is obviously well placed to take advantage of that short to medium term potential demand there and price fluctuations to the upside as the world transitions away and kind of throws the baby out with the bathwater to some extent. So it's kind of a little bit of a perverse upside there in some ways. But look, yeah, I mean, I'll put some colour around some of the comments Mark made. So he said they did dip into a loss last financial year, expecting a big bounce back this year as they sort of get some of those production issues under control. And we're seeing, you know, a nice spike in coal prices, mainly, you know, a spike in coal prices as we've had some energy issues, crises in Europe and the US and you know, people trying to keep warm in the Northern Hemisphere. So the Indonesia thing is symptomatic of this, this again, short-term picture of countries looking to secure that energy transition or have security through the energy transition. So prices are up. Whitehaven is not expected to increase its earnings greatly over the next couple of FYs. If you look at the broker consensus, we're probably looking at a reduction of sort of, you know, 20-30% year on year. But they're estimates, and those estimates tend not to take into account these short-term price fluctuations. So if we sort of bring that back, there's a potential upside there. There's a disconnect between the negativity in general in coal, the negativity in the estimates for Whitehaven specifically and what's actually happening. And that's kind of being reflected in the share price. So if you're looking at the chart, we're actually seeing, you know, you probably wouldn't have imagined that a coal stock could be in a long-term uptrend, but it is. Short-term uptrend has swung back to the upside after a bit of a pullback through sort of November, December, and it's actually starting to look really good. Higher peaks, higher troughs, candles are starting to improve, moving averages are turning up. So look, on the basis of the chart, on the basis of some of those fundamentals, I could see, you know, I could buy it here. I could happily buy it here, but it would be more of a risk money bet given the volatility. Obviously, it's an option on coal prices. So it's a momentum trade. It's not necessarily one for your sort of income or defensive investors. It's more for your technical analysts and your momentum players looking to get in and get out based upon a theme.
Okay. Good one. That is Whitehaven Coal. As I mentioned, an old world stock. Let's move to a very new world stock. And these we get the 10 stocks, of course, that brought to us by you. The first one, Life360 from Byron. And Carl, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the newest entrant on the S&P ASX 200 index. It is, of course, the digital consumer subscription services market. Certainly it's trying to get whole families involved in terms of their ecosystem, isn't it, just as far as all those devices that you have in the family.
Yeah, so it's basically it's they've got an app, Andrew, that will track your family members. It's mainly geared towards so older kids. So it's not your younger kids necessarily, although I'll talk about that in a second. It's mainly kids who are driving. It's you know, it's very much US focused. So kids potentially going off to college or starting to drive through high school and parents being able to track their departures and arrivals. More recently this year, they've expanded with the acquisition of Geobit into wearables for children, so tracking where your kids are in that regard. And then a couple of months ago, they acquired Tile, which many viewers have probably heard of and maybe even used some of those products. So those little discs that you sort of attach to your backpack or whatever you don't want to lose, and then you can track its location via your smartphone there. So they were going gangbusters. I mean, in terms of subscriptions, average revenue per user, so they get you in a freemium model. So they give you limited services free, and then they try and convert you to some of their more premium subscriptions down the track. And look, they're growing both the freemium and the paid users, and exponential growth, hence the chart, hence the exponential nature of the chart. Where that exponential move stopped is the acquisition of Tile. So the market hasn't liked that. It's, I mean, not huge. The company's about 1.7 billion market cap. It doesn't have any earnings, by the way. Mark will probably talk about that. Probably won't make any money to FY24. Even then, it'd be trading on 80 times. But the market doesn't like this Tile acquisition, mainly, I think, because, look, Apple has just released a competitive device. Google's not far away. Amazon's not far away. Samsung's already got one in the market. And I think the market's looking at that acquisition, probably scratching their heads a little bit, wondering why they're going to such a competitive space. So long story short, buy, hold, or sell. I think it's been a buy for us for many, many months. I think back in May, we put a buy in at around about 570. We reiterated a buy, I think, in August at 10. But again, it's horses for courses. So it was strictly from a momentum player, because there is no valuation case necessarily. You don't have that support by looking at a stock and saying that's so cheap. It is purely momentum play. So now that the momentum, I would say, is out of the stock after that acquisition, I think you need to look very cautiously at it. Take some profits here if you haven't already, and then look at that $9 level. If it breaks below $9, that's where I'd be exiting the rest of my position if you've gotten in on any of our Think Markets recommendations. If it can break back above 10, that's your trigger to hang on to it. So it's not a buy right now, and it's a hold based upon those scenarios I've given you.
Okay. Mark, you can, Carl's just telling us, a little more flavour and colour there to what's going on.
From my perspective, there's only 2 full years of data, which is not enough for it to predict anything anyway. But as Carl mentioned, the market cap's about 1.7 billion, yet their sales are only 104 million. That was 220, and 219 was 84. And I haven't got the 21 numbers yet. They haven't come out, which is growing, but they're losing. They lost 21 million in 2020. So until they actually turn a profit, there's no PE ratio. So, but if you look at it, it's 17 times sales is what the price of the shares are. That's a massive amount to catch up from the point of view of the business needing to be become profitable. If you're talking about it as an investment rather than a momentum play or speculation or something like that, which is not what we do at Team Invest. So we wouldn't look at this company until it had about at least 4 years of good history after becoming profitable. So it's a long, long way away from us looking at it. But I will just say the other thing, which Carl mentioned, what Apple and Google and everyone are doing. This is a space that is dominated by the big players that have the relationships and the network moats with all the consumers. I think this is a really tough place to be in. So for me, I wouldn't touch it.
All right. That's you made that clear. That's pretty emphatic. That is Life 360. All right, let's move on to our second stock of the day. And this one coming to us from Josh, Michael Hill International. Now, Mark, of course, jewelry, and would have done well, I guess, over Christmas. That's certainly a time when a lot of people like buying that that sort of stuff. And in fact, I think what the company provided a trading update, well, the last one there, which was positive, moved to a 52-week high. How are you seeing it?
It's actually not a bad business. I mean, retail for us has been a fantastic area over the last, since the GFC. It's still really good. Like the best retailers like AX1, Nick Scali, maybe Super Cheap Retail and JB Hi-Fi and so on, have all done really, really well. And they're all on relatively low PE ratios in a market that has extended PE ratios, which means that there's a lot less downside risk if we do go into a higher interest rate environment and where PE is some sort of return to the mean, horrible thought. But it's a possible. Retail is a really good area, and it's overlooked by a lot of people because it's not as sexy as some of these other companies with really good stories. So Michael Hill is a good operation. They've had a good coronavirus period. If you look at their 220 results up until 21, their earnings jumped up quite strongly. But prior to that, they had 2 years where it was slightly down, and then before that, 3 years where it was slightly up. So the earnings were fairly flat. It's got a very good return on equity at 25%. Not much debt. The debt's primarily leases, so they didn't have any debt really apart from that. lease liability under the new accounting standards. So I'd say this is, you know, this is a worthwhile company to consider. At the moment, the PE ratio is on 10.9, which is pretty indicative of retailers, as I was talking about. We're showing it returning about 4% a year at the current price. So it's a bit expensive. If you're going to buy it, I would suggest you'd want at least a 10% return. And on a 10% return, that's would give you a price buy price of $1.04. So it's currently about $1.38. So it's a bit it's close to the red on the PE ratio for us, which means it's getting very close to the top quartile of its trading range. So if you like the business, and I think there's nothing not to like about it, it just needs to be a bit cheaper.
Okay, so not a buy at this point, but you're considering it.
No.
On where
no, well, I'm yep. not considering it even. It's not even on my consideration list. But,
right,
but it's,
okay.
there's nothing wrong with it. I've got quite a lot invested in retailers, and most of the ones I was mentioning are showing 15 to 20% compound returns, you know, going forward from their current price,
yep.
which is a lot better than what Michael Hill's looking at. So nothing wrong with it, but it's just too expensive.
Okay, too expensive. Carl, in fact, yeah, interesting looking at that chart then, sort of pre-COVID, it was certainly heading in the wrong direction, and then it's sort of reversed that completely during COVID.
Yeah, look, it's one of those companies that's got a big COVID bump, and the question then is, can it sustain that momentum that it's got out of COVID? And really, that's the risk going forward. So it's one of those companies that, if you look at the broker consensus for the next few FYs, they're expecting either flat earnings or a contraction in earnings to reflect the fact that huge bump and then cycling, you know, those huge earnings. So if they do better than that, you know, if they can still grow earnings from here, then they will do very well. And I think the market is kind of, waking up to what was a great deal of value in Michael Hill. So last time I covered this on the call, it was, I think, in June. I'll check my notes here. In June, yeah, at 82 cents. And it was just so ridiculously cheap. It was, you know, it had a PE, you know, forward PE of about six. And I said, you know, watch out for a big market re-rating. It's happened. It's exceeded our fair value target, which we've then raised to currently 145. It's up about 5 or 6% today, even to exactly that price. So I'm kind of echoing Mark's comments here. It's a quality business. There's a lot to like about it, but it's at that point where it's fairly valued. Coincidentally, you mentioned they've got a shareholder return of 4% going forward. That's the dividend yield. So, with probably not as much in the share price to get me excited and just the dividend yield from here, I can't call it a buy. So whilst it's been a buy for us in the past, I think it's transitioning more to a hold on the basis that the chart looks fantastic. So it goes from, when I said horses for courses, it goes from one of those great value stocks that any income or even growth investor can buy to now, because it's fully valued, it's more becoming a momentum play. So you're holding on the basis that it has momentum in that chart, and you will continue to hold while that chart continues to point bottom left, top right. Then I think if you've got it, you're starting to say, okay, Carl, what do I look for? How do I know when to get out? And I'll very quickly, just looking at some of these candles that you might want to look at. So big black candles would be a great indication to start to take profits. You don't have to get all out, but start to take profits. Or if you get a candle that has a very long upper shadow, so prices are surging in the morning and then coming back and closing near the lows for the day. And again, that's another trick to start to take some profits on this. Mark mentioned about 104, I think 110 it might have been, correct me if I'm wrong, as value. We're probably around that 120 to 130 mark as starting to be good value again. So you can buy pullbacks on this one.
Okay, fair enough. But at the moment, a hold.
Look, it's a hold.
Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, Carl. All right, let's move to resources and one of the biggies. Rio Tinto, Damien wanting to know, he's saying with pre-Christmas announcements of the new chairman, extensive China experience and the purchase of a lithium mine with a new brine extraction technology, is it out of the sin bin and going to return to favour as a global diversified miner? Carl.
Very good question, Damien. I'm not sure markets in the long term move as much on chair appointments. I'm not saying they're not important, but it's more about, you know, the operations and what the company's extracting from those. So that's first item. Second item, in terms of that Rincon acquisition, which is the lithium operation they bought in, I want to say Argentina, but it's either Argentina or Chile. And it is a very early stages project, so it's not like it's producing now, but there is a significant resource that they can get production probably over the next couple of years. So yes, it's part of a broader plan by Rio Tinto to transition more into those sort of EV battery materials, but that's still more of a medium-term thing rather than providing any sort of short-term uplift. The deal with Rio Tinto is still iron ore. It's still an iron ore company predominantly. It obviously does have give you exposure to aluminium, which the price of aluminium still looks very, very strong, and copper, which equally looks very strong as well. But you need to have an outlook on the iron ore price. In terms of the iron ore price, look, we're fairly neutral on the iron ore price. We knew that 230 was way, way too much. We thought that 80 is probably too cheap. And I think around here in that sort of $100, $120 US a tonne, I think is that that Goldilocks zone that we could see iron ore prices stay at for, you know, the medium term. And if it does that, then Rio Tinto continues to be a cash cow with some upside from those battery minerals. Long story short, buy, hold, sell. I think you can hold it. It's not a buy for us. I think if you're going to play in the metal space, look for more of the pure plays. I think there's more leverage to some of those trends there. So, for example, if you're looking for a lithium producer, you know, Pilbara is probably a good place to go, but IGO with its nickel and copper exposure, I think, is probably my favourite in that space. If you're looking for copper, then Oz Minerals, I think, is probably my preferred pick there, and one we're going to talk about a little bit later on, which is Sandfire Resources.
Yep, absolutely. We'll get to that. All right, thanks, Carl. Mark, your thoughts then? Of course, you know, we've seen the likes of BHP and Fortescue, the iron ore miners, they're diversifying. That's the way of the world at the moment. So how are you seeing Rio at this point?
Well, the diversifying, particularly with Fortescue, with hydrogen and so on, to me is a little bit political. You know, I mean, there's a lot of money to be gained from miners getting from money from governments for subsidies and all these things as well. So I'm a bit more cynical about their intent. I'm sure they've got good intentions, but Rio is a diversified miner, and I wouldn't be buying it because of this brine lithium business. Okay, that would just be a bolt-on business for what they already have for their primary business. My view is that all of the iron ore miners have been oversold based on the price of the iron ore dropping when it went down to 80. Now it's come back to 120-ish and seems to be stabilizing. I agree with Carl there. The demand is still there. We still have the cheapest shipping rates to China and so on, and Africa is still a long way away from coming on stream for the Chinese imports, which I'm sure they would love to get rid of us if they can, but that's not any time in the near future. Rio is paying 78% out in the last year as a dividend of earnings, so that puts it at about, because it's roughly $100, so that to me sounds like at least 10%, probably plus franking credits. I'm not sure whether it's fully franked or not. So that's actually a very good income for that on a stock where it's just currently on a PE of 6.6, and you're, unless the earnings drop off precipitously, and I don't think they will, in my view, you know, Rio is probably pretty good investment on balance. We're showing a returning about 20% a year compound on a margin of safety, which is pretty conservative, and it's all green on all our filters. So it's not a company we would normally get interested in, but I think income seeking investors and so on, I don't think there's a lot of downside in it at the current share price, in my view. And just on lithium, Carl mentioned a couple of the ones he likes. I mean, the one we like most that's exposed most to lithium is Mineral Resources, MIN, which also has iron ore as well. But they are very, very well positioned with lithium hydroxide, with their joint venture with Albemarle in Kemerton, and their Mount Marion and their Wodgina mines, which are, you know, they're in production, and their lithium hydroxide plant will be fully operational this year. So they're not at exploration stage or the development stage, they're at the selling stage. So that would be my suggestion.
All right.
If I could add there, Mineral Resources love that one as well. So yeah, I mean, it didn't come to mind, but when I did the notes for this, but it is actually, obviously Mark mentions the iron ore exposure. It is a great replacement potentially for Rio in your portfolio. I think there's more upside there.
Guys, you're competing with each other. We're getting the bonus stock selections today, and certainly in lithium. That's That's great to see.
Yeah, bear in mind, Andrew, that I've got a large holding in Min, so I am very biased.
Okay. But Mark, let me press you then. Would you be buying Rio at this level, or you're holding?
Not really, because it's not one that we. I'll say that Tim Invest don't like commodity investments because the companies can't control the price. That's the risk. But sometimes, and if you look at mineral resources, you'd have to say, well, isn't mineral resources a commodity company? Well, it blurs the boundaries, because when we originally invested in it, it was a contract processor and crusher. They definitely weren't a miner. They were really they were picks and shovels guys. And then over time, they bought mines, which is still primarily to feed their machine, which is how they make their money out of services. So I've got to squint at it. So, because people would say to me, "Well, aren't I being hypocritical saying I'd invest in Min, then I wouldn't invest in Rio?"
Yeah.
So you see my dilemma.
Fair enough, too. All right. Okay, that's Rio. Let's let's see you sink your teeth into this one. Almonds. I'm talking Select Harvests. Carmen wanting to know about this one. It is Australia's largest almond grower and processor. In fact, it's the third largest in the world, although I noticed that it did have a fire at one of its handling areas on Boxing Day, so that would have affected supply somewhat there in its production at the same time. Mark, do you like almonds?
No, we haven't for this. I do, and I particularly like scorched almonds. So that is my favourite. But no, I love almonds. We have done work on Select Harvest, and we've spoken to management in the past, but not lately. We looked at it back in about 2013, and also just looking at my notes here, we had a good look at it in 2019. And in 2019, it had a big lift in earnings because of the problems in California. California is the biggest almond producing area in the world, and their production was way down because of, I can't remember what the reasons were, but whatever the reasons were, they had a couple of terrible years. So the prices of almonds went up, and Select Harvest did really, really well for a while. But agriculture is just really, really difficult because there's just so many things that can get you. There's not only the competitive pressures globally, there's the weather, there's the supply and demand, there's all sorts of things. It's just a really tough area to make money consistently. And because of that, it doesn't pass our filters because its stability of earnings is too erratic. So it's all over the shop, and it's currently running at about 4% return on equity. We want a minimum of 10. It's too hard. So I couldn't. There's not enough stability in the business for me to be able to predict what I think the earnings will do. So it comes back to the commodity argument again. In agriculture like this, when you're a producer, you're on the commodity end of it.
Yep. Okay. Look, I think everyone recognises that agriculture is difficult. Carl, what are you seeing in particular, though, with Select Harvests?
Yeah, look, I think I'm going to echo Mark's comments again. I think I'd rather be digging stuff out of the ground than crowing almonds. It's just a little bit too hard. And if you look at the Select Harvest share price, it really does reflect the price of almonds. At the moment, almond pricing is down. So it's been certainly sort of falling since COVID. And whether that's related or not, who's to say, or related to a drought in California? I'm just not an expert on that. But what I can say is that they're more of a marginal producer now with the fall in that almond price than they were a couple of years ago. So not to say that they're operationally not doing well. I mean, they continue to increase their crop harvest and had another bumper year this year. And they're doing quite well operationally, but because of that uncertainty with just the pricing of the main product, and it's not like they produce a bunch of other things either, Andrew. It's they really are dependent on just this one product. So that's also another big concern for me. So I don't think it's expensive. I think there's some value in the share price here, but it's just not compelling enough based upon that to buy it. And I think kind of the charts kind of agreeing with me as well. It's had a big run sort of through September, October. And then it's just fallen back and hasn't been able to bounce. So on that basis, I think I'm definitely an avoid. For people who have it, they want to know if they should hold it. Look, I think there's just a smidge enough to hold it on the basis that we are seeing some nice candles coming in through December. There's a little bit of volume there to suggest that some buying's occurring, but that also gives you a bit of a sort of a get out clause as well. So I would say I'll give you a number here. If you've got it, and you're looking for a point where you say, look, I just can't stick with this any longer. If it breaks below 580, that's where I'd be getting out. Until then, you probably hang on to it.
Yep. Okay. Good one. That is Select Harvest. All right, to our fifth stock, Sonic Healthcare, brought to us by Eva. Now, this is, well, we know how well some of these companies have done, particularly during the pandemic. Carl has acquired the US pathology company ProPath, that's based in Texas. Clearly, we know the value of pathology companies at the moment, given what's going on around the world. How do you see Sonic?
Yeah, look, I mean, it has done so well, hasn't it, from all of this testing. So that's a big part of their business now. It wasn't anywhere on the spectrum a couple of years ago, but now compared to the bread and butter that Sonic does, which is its no sort of diagnostic imaging business, it's now a massive, massive part of what they do. But with that comes the risk that if we're not going to test more, as much or more in the future, then that part of their business is going to potentially shrink. So it's a little bit like a Rio Tinto. It's a little bit like a Michael Hill in that regard, that we've got this great tailwind from COVID, and how much of that is the company going to be able to hang on to justify its current valuation, which I think is fairly fully priced here. So I think it's sitting a little bit above our fair value target, which is about $42. And, you know, when we say fair value, that's where we think it should be trading. And we have, you know, sort of margins above and below that. We've got a full value target of about 55. So look, all things is valuation. So we like the stock. I mean, we think it's a high quality stock. There's lots to like, even apart from this testing. We think testing rates will remain elevated. But having said that, the rates of testing keep increasing. So I was on the show a couple of months ago before Omicron, Andrew, and I said, I think Nadine was hosting, I said, Nadine, I think, you know, testing rates are going to remain elevated because there could be new strains, et cetera, et cetera. And so testing rates are way higher than back then. So now do I say a testing rate's going to stay even higher again? And I'm starting to doubt that now. I think maybe we're at peak testing. So I think it's a hold. I'll get to the point. I think it's a hold on the basis that there's plenty of quality there. It is over our fair value target. So start to look at momentum now. If you're in it based upon our previous buy recommendations, watch the momentum. So we're looking for some of those turning point signals that we've mentioned before, but hang on to it on the basis that the chart is bottom left, top right, looks fantastic.
All right, okay. Yeah, testing. Well, it depends whether you can get your hand on a kit or, of course, a pathology service is actually open at the moment, which is a struggle in Australia. Mark, pathology, obviously a great game to be in.
What Carl said. I mean, long term, if you actually look at it before COVID, their results were fairly ordinary. It was it was solid, but not a lot of growth. You know, so it was a slow growing company, but quite reliable, as you'd expect. Most, that's generally typical in the healthcare area anyway. So earnings have jumped up dramatically, you know, through COVID. The testing regime issue, I actually think, you remember, we're already 6 months into this financial year. So we've still got elevated, effective anything, much higher testing rates. So that will help the Sonic's earnings, I would think, in this financial year anyway. You know, so how much longer that'll go is we don't know. However, we seem to have shifted to the instant antigen tests and so on, which aren't going to help Sonic. So I think we are past peak testing at this stage anyway. And you can't invest in a company based on that anyway. So you need to look at the long term. And it actually looks, the long term future, if you extrapolate the last couple of years of earnings growth, looks fantastic. But if you take that off, I think you'd want to take a more conservative view to earnings, which means that it's a bit overpriced from our point of view. To get a 10% return per year for the next 5 years on a margin of safety, we have a buy price of $38.60. But there's nothing wrong with the company. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that I think you have to discount, you know, the more recent earnings to be sensible. And the other issue is this acquisition in the US. I don't believe Sonic's done any overseas acquisitions, if any, prior. I could be wrong. Carl, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know the company well. That's significantly dangerous. We've got a long history of capital being burnt through particularly US acquisitions of companies. Healthcare should be a bit more stable, you would hope, but I don't know. And that's a risk as well. So we'd like to see how that pans out and what happens over the first couple of years.
So it is a what?
Well, I'd say if you have it as, if you're a shareholder, I'd probably say you'd hold it. I'm not going as far as saying you should sell it, but I wouldn't buy it unless it was at, you know, like mid 30s.
Yeah.
Not 46.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, as mentioned at the top there, it has acquired that US pathology company ProPath. So, It's one, you know, that you're talking about as far as, you know, what those companies are doing and the risks there. All right, let's sum up then as to where we are as part of the first five stocks we looked at, plus our stock of the day, of course. That was Whitehaven Coal. Share price up around 7% in this morning's trade. Mark's saying, well, I mean, he's looking at coal at the moment, certainly a spike in those prices. We're seeing what's going on in Europe. There's an energy shortfall there. Particularly that's going on globally too, with perhaps some steering away from nuclear at the moment. So that's putting a greater demand on coal. And Carl saying there is potential upside there. Could be a buy, but he does see risk there. All right, to our first stock, Life 360. Just a point, actually, this is already in the portfolio. Carl, pointing to the fact that it's acquired Tile, since that point, the market essentially voting that they don't like that deal. So saying perhaps you could take some profit, but essentially it's a hold. Mark pointing out the fact that it's has no profit, still a long way to go. You need 4 years after it becoming profitable to actually take a look at. So he's avoiding it at this stage. All right, to our second stock there, Michael Hill International, a retailer, of course, specialising in jewellery. Mark pointing out that, well, these retailers have clearly done well during during COVID, but he sees it at the top of this trading range, too expensive, essentially, for Mark. And Carl, he's got a hold on it, saying, once again, a bit pricey, but he does see it as a quality stock. Rio Tinto. Now, we've seen you know, the likes of BHP and Fortescue diversify, or Rio Tinto also getting in on that with that lithium mine, Carl. But it's obviously clearly more about iron ore, and Carl's seeing that as continued cash cow. He's got a hold on it. Mark saying that, well, all iron ore miners have been oversold, in his opinion. He sees it as a good investment. They both pointed out, as far as lithium is concerned, Mark likes mineral resources, Carl, IGO. And Select Harvests, both agreeing this is difficult because it is an agricultural stock. It specialises in almonds, obviously, both essentially avoiding it. And finally there, Sonic Healthcare, Carl saying great tailwinds from COVID, but it's just above fair value. Although he does like it, it is a hold. Also a hold there from Mark. All right, so that's our first five stocks of the day. Let's continue then on the sixth stock. And this is Alliance Aviation, brought to us from Trevor. It's essentially a provision of chartering of allied aviation services to the, specifically to the mining and energy and also tourism and government sectors. Mark, look, it's obviously been a pretty difficult sector to be in. So what's your outlook for Alliance Aviation?
Return on capital for us, it's running at 7%. Now, this is a capital-intensive business because they've got planes and engines. They also do a lot of changeover and maintenance contracts and provide pilots. They do all sorts of things apart from running their own charter business. I've got a member who's in the aviation business area and it always follows it. So we're showing a returning about 8% a year on our default filters and slightly negative on a margin of safety. It's currently on a PE of 19.6 trailing, and that's in the red. So that for its price, for its PE range, it's in the top quartile, which means expensive. If you wanted to buy it, I think you wouldn't. If you wanted to get a 10% on a margin of safety, which is what I would, you know, I would normally use as a baseline at least, then you couldn't pay more than $2.26, which is a long way away from $4.
Okay.
At the moment. So I would just say too expensive.
Too expensive. So okay. Yep. So you're avoiding that one. Carl.
I'm going to differ with Mark on this one. It's certainly trading 19.6 times FY21 earnings, but there is some good growth in the business. So We're talking 26% expected this year, 35% the year after, and it does start to flatten out from there. But the growth, if you have a business that's growing, it obviously does bring that PE down. Now, the risk is it doesn't do what you think it's going to do, and you end up with a higher PE than what you thought it was going to be. So that's the risk you need to assess before you invest in anything, let alone an airline services business. But I think there's plenty to like about the business. I think, they're one of the few businesses that managed to hold their earnings steady through COVID. So 0.1 of a cent in terms of EPS decline in FY20 versus FY19, I think it was. But apart from that, they've actually grown their earnings through this crisis. So I think that speaks to the strength of the underlying business and the strength of management as well. Look, the big upside is going to be the reopening. It's going to be people getting back to normal and travelling out there. Obviously, domestic travel will be the focus initially. And that's where they could see some upside in their wet leasing agreements with Qantas. So Qantas saying, look, we need extra capacity and you guys have planes and we'll lease those planes on a short-term basis. They've got a lot of bread and butter strength in their operations from the mining sector, which I can't see slowing down anytime soon. So a lot to like. I think they're reasonably priced with plenty of growth. I'm happy to buy them on the valuation basis, but I need the chart to catch up. So if we look at the chart, it's just very, very flat at the moment. It's a long-term uptrend, but it's been in a sideways basing pattern for about 6 months. So I like the fact that, there's that long-term trend, but until it starts to just push up through the top of that range, I can't get too excited. We've got a target of about 480 on it with, I think, about 4%, 3 or 4% dividend yield for the next couple of years. So, if it was to close about 440, I think I'm starting to get very interested on the basis of the valuation and then a bit of a resumption of momentum. For now, it's a hold.
Okay, a hold there. It's Alliance Aviation. All right, Carl, let's move on to our next one. This is Byron Energy. It's an independent oil and natural gas exploration and production company. It is focused in the Gulf of Mexico. Your thoughts?
Yeah, very interesting little company. I hadn't heard of it before. Honestly, I got the notes for this show. The first thing I do is look at the chart, Andrew, as you know, that's my first point. And then I go and break down the company and look at the fundamentals. And the chart, when I looked at it, we're talking about a flat chart of Alliance Aviation. This is not only a flat chart, but it's actually in a long-term downtrend. So it's actually been decreasing steadily for an extended period of time. I'm going to zoom out to the long-term chart here. So if you're looking at from 40 cents a few years ago down to 10 cents now, $1.10 back in the mid-teens, to 10 cents now. So it is a company that's probably issued a bunch of shares along the way to fund its operations. And, on the first pass you go, this is just one of those dead in the water exploration companies you'd never touch. Then you look at the fundamentals and they're actually making money. So they've got a couple of producing wells or interest in producing wells in the Gulf of Mexico. Cash flows are increasing, production is increasing, reserves are increasing, trading on about 23 times last year's earnings. I've got no idea what that will be next year because I just can't forecast the growth in this. It's just not enough information for me to gather to be able to do that. $4 million in the bank, there's a bit of debt there. So I'm going to just cut the long story short here and say that whilst there appears to be some really good things happening in terms of the business side of things operationally and in terms of the valuation, until the chart picks up, I'm not a buyer. So I'll give you a level if you've got it. Obviously, the person who's asked the question has got the stock, I'm guessing, and they're probably wanting to know some key points to look at. Look, if it got above 18, I think it's starting to pull out of that downtrend, and that would be very encouraging. Until then, it's just a pass.
Okay, it's a pass. In fact, you mentioned the question there. Sorry, I in fact forgot to ask that question, but Mark can answer it because Dan saying that it has been a roller coaster, obviously. Yep. Saying all mining companies obviously run into difficulties and failures along the way. But do the team see this as starting to put some runs on the board? Is now the time to buy in? Mark.
Not for me. Just talking about the shares issue, they've gone from... In the last 10 years, they've gone from 100,000 shares outstanding to 1 million. So that's a 10 times factor increase in shares outstanding. So remember, that's always working against the earnings. So in other words, for a dollar of earnings 10 years ago is now 10 cents of earnings if you're a shareholder, for the same dollar. So that's not good. Now, they've obviously used that to continue funding. They class themselves as an explorer when you look at their company information on the ASX. which is a dangerous area to be in, of course, because that explorer by definition means spend lots of money, milk shareholders, and hopefully we'll find something that eventually we can turn into a commercial business and actually make some money and give some money back to shareholders, which history's proven that to be a poor bet for most shareholders, and you'd be better off going to the casino. Reiterating what Carl said, though, is they do have earnings, and the PE at the moment's about 15 on those earnings, and that's at the very bottom of its range. So at the bottom of its PE range, so that's that's actually encouraging, and it's showing 9.7% return per year over the next 5 years on a margin of safety on our calculations, which is pretty good. So EPS is growing. It's not growing massively, but sales are growing strongly, which you would hope that would support the EPS growth going forward as well. So, look, it's not something we would be interested in, but if you're into investing in energy companies that are profitable and have plenty of upside, this looks pretty cheap if that's what floats your boat.
Okay. All right. Let's. We're running out of time, so I better get a move along. Our next one is Early Pay, brought to us from Roger. This is on the line, in fact, because it is in the portfolio. So interesting to see what you guys have to say on it then. Mark, of course, it is a diversified financing company, trade finance, foreign exchange, equipment finance, invoice finance. Your thoughts?
It fails on our return on capital at 8%. It's got a high debt figure as well, but I'm assuming there's debt on the balance sheet that they're using to lend. So there's a bit of a misnomer on how debt's dealt with at the moment with some of these companies. So to be able to really know, it's only got a market cap of 102 million, so it's quite small. And as you said in that intro, they're doing a lot of different things. Like they're working in foreign exchange, commercial finance, and so on. That's a lot of areas to be working in when you're a little $100 million market cap company. I would find that, it's a stretch. Their earnings growth is showing 25%. Over the last 6 years, EPS growth rate, which is pretty good, but the sales have gone down. So sales are negative 4.6 over the last 6 years, and earnings growth is 25% positive. Now that's great, because often you see charts the other way around where the sales have gone higher and the earnings are going down, but generally speaking, that's not sustainable, because obviously you still need headline revenue and sales growth to be keep growing earnings. You can't keep increasing margin all the time, which is, you assume that's what that is. So that augurs against the high EPS growth rate. And what that comes out in our numbers, it gives you a return on default. In other words, this is our best fit likely return over the next 5 years based on its forecast, its performance over the last 6 years, of 34% a year, which you say, that's great, it's a buy. But on a margin of safety, it's 1.1. So you've got a 33 times difference, if that's right, on what the risk return is, if you like. And my margin of safety figures are 1.4% on growth over the next 5 years, not 25, and gives a terminal PE of about 12, and that gives you 1.1. So that range is 29 cents buy price up to $1.19, and it's currently 44 if you want a 10% return. So, you know, I would need to understand a lot more about the business, and it's a bit small for us. You know, there's 100 million, there's not enough liquidity. If our members all got enthusiastic about it, we'd push the share price up to triple the price. So it's not really feasible for us under 150 at least.
Okay, all right. So that's essentially a pass then from you at this point. Carl?
I guess so.
No, it's a pass. Yeah, look, I think it's a pass for now. But I think there's lots to like about the business. I mean, Mark's talked about how it has grown its earnings very steadily over a long period of time. It's had revenues have been fairly flat though, and that's I think partly last couple of years due to COVID. But it is a bit of a reopening play as businesses start to require more financing going forward. So I think there's some upside there. Look, I like it. I think it looks cheap here, but I just needed to pick up on the chart. Long story short, until it traded sort of above 47, 48, I couldn't get too excited. It is a long-term uptrend, but again, one of those sort of short to medium-term flat trends. Right. So it's a keep an eye on it, but not right now.
Keep an eye. Okay, that's Early Pay. All right, let's continue. Coles, of course, we know what it does. Carl, how are you looking at this then, I guess, particularly as we move out of the COVID phase?
Yeah, look, it's one of those big sort of blue chip stocks that there's a lot of information for the market to digest, and therefore you tend, I think with these stocks you tend to find that they're fairly valued at any point in time, and that's our opinion on Coles. I think it's pretty close to its fair valuation. So yeah, you buy it here. I don't think you're going to see a huge amount of upside on it. It's got a reasonable dividend yield though, about 3.4%. So I think again, horses for courses. If you're more of a defensive income investor, I think it's okay for you. If you're more of a growth-oriented investor, which is our style of investing over here, I don't think it's one you'd run out and chase. The chart's pretty reflective of that. It's long-term uptrend, yes, but otherwise fairly flat over the last, you can see there on the chart there, sort of really 12 months at the same price today as it was 12 months ago. So look, if anything, it's better than Woolworths, if that's what you're wondering, but it's a hold at best for me.
Okay, Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's only got 3 years history, of course, as a listed entity, so we can't really give you a forecast, but it's. I would expect Coles to match inflation going forward. So that's really. I mean, their profit margin is only 2.6%. The net profit margin, which is to be expected, for a business like this. And its return on capital is about 11%, which is okay. And the return on equity is actually very good at 35. So it's a safe investment, but it's going to keep up with inflation and pay a maybe positive on inflation when you include the dividend. But we don't sort of invest for dividend or growth. We work on total return is really our focus. So we like to add both together. And really what we really like is both being good. But I think Coles is fine. If for somebody who is happy with, like a 6% or 7% a year total return, I would expect Coles would be something like that.
Okay, so I'd take that as a whole then. You're both happy with it, essentially. Yep, fair enough. Okay, let's round it out with Sandfire Resources. We were pointing this earlier. Of course, we're looking at as far as where battery materials are going. David wanted to know, is this a good copper company or are there others that are better, whether they be small or larger caps? Of course, it has just received approval from the Spanish government for its acquisition of Matza Mining Complex in Spain, significant addition to its portfolio. Mark?
It's not one that, as I said, because it's a miner, but just looking at it on our system, it passes everything, and it's showing the range at the moment. The PE is on 7.3, which is about halfway in the bottom quartile of its range, which is good. So that's definitely a good timing thing. That's about as far as we go on timing using charts. EPS growth rate's been is average 17% with reasonably good stability, and sales have been growing at 5% with very high stability. So this would be prior to the acquisition they've made, but they're actually making money, and we're showing it returning 27% a year on our default measures over the next 5 years per year, or 9.5 on a margin of safety. So if you don't mind, and by the way, they're in copper, which is a very strong, and looks like that will continue to be with the amount of required copper for all the new renewable power supplies and so on. So I'll have to say I'll call it a buy.
Oh, okay, we've got a buy there on Sandfire. Carl,
I'm not saying,
agree?
I'm not saying Team Invest would buy it with our members, because I don't think you'd get up. I don't think you'd get up, to the point where we'd really scrutinise it in detail. But look, the numbers aren't lying, and they look good, and it's in a good spot.
Okay, all right, you got the qualifier there, but you've said it, yeah. Carl.
I'm ditto with Mark. I echo everything he said there. It's a company we do like, and we've had a buy on this for a while. So, look at you mentioned the acquisition in Spain's basically going to triple their production on what were some really solid operations anyway, just fantastic cash flows. And we like copper prices as well. We think the price of copper is going to be higher in 5 years' time than it is today. And these guys are almost a pure play in that regard, and significantly more now with this acquisition. They do have some exposure to gold there as well. But I think it's fairly recently priced. We've got a fair value target around about sort of 750 area, which gives a bit of upside there, and full value way higher than that. So the trend looks good. We can see some nice momentum in the chart coming back in, short-term, long-term uptrend. Great candles, great price action. So it's all tick, tick, tick for me. Happy to continue to buy.
Excellent stuff. All right, that's a double buy. That means it goes in the portfolio, Sandfire Resources. All right, let's sum up the second half of the show. We began with Alliance Aviation. Mark's saying essentially, look, it's too expensive at this point, is avoiding it. Carl's saying it held its business during COVID. Reasonable price, it's got to hold. Byron Energy, this is oil and gas. Carl's saying long-term downtrend, but it is making money, but he's passing on it. Mark's also a pass, saying explorers, they're often a poor bet. Early pay, Mark saying, looking a bit stretched given what it's doing, sales down, he's passing. Carl also a pass for now, but he says it does look potentially cheap at these levels. Coles, it's a defensive play, of course. Carl's got a hold on it, also noting that it's better than Woolies. And Mark saying a safe investment, he's also got a hold on it. And to round it out there, we had Sandfire Resources. It's making money and it's obviously in a good space as far as copper and the electrification of the planet is concerned. And Carl pointing out there that Spanish acquisition will triple production. Both have a buy on it. So that is the show and they are the stocks. And we thank our guests now, Mark Morland from Team Invest and Carl Capelinga from Think Markets. Guys, thanks very much.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Carl.
All right, now, any stocks you'd like us to cover, flick us an email, thecall@ausbiz.com.au, or you can tweet us at AusbizTV. And a reminder, where to find the stocks we have in the Call's portfolio, you can head to ausbiz.co/portfolio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.